Don't go trying to be a hockey player.
But I am a hockey player, sir. Like you.
I don't play much hockey.
You're a hockey player, sir.
You know they just want you to bleed, right?
Well, I'm here to do whatever they need me to do. You know, if they need me to bleed, then I'll bleed for my team.
You are listening to The Hockey Show on 101.5 UMFM.
You have my respect. Whatever that means to you, you got it.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I have your attention, please? Good evening.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Hockey Show here on 101.5 UMFM, Canada's only campus-produced radio show that strictly talks hockey. Glad to have you with us tonight, everybody. Jenna back. Jenna, how are you? How's everything going?
It's going. How are you?
You know what? I'm all right. It's been a busy week so far for me, but I'm making it through. So things are all right on my end as well. Lot to go over, as I was saying, crazy amount of news from all over the corners of the earth when it comes to hockey. We'll start with the obvious, though, everybody's been talking about it for the last 3 days. On Monday night, Washington Capitals forward Tom Wilson went a little ballistic in the game between the Washington Capitals and New York Rangers. I'm assuming you caught the clip and saw everything that happened, correct?
Yeah, I saw the clip.
So Wilson received two minor penalties for roughing, both that happened in the melee, and a 10-minute misconduct. Wilson on Tuesday was assessed a $5,000 fine, the maximum that can be assessed to him under the collective bargaining agreement, despite everything he did in that entire sequence. I'm not sure how and why the Department of Player Safety thinks that that's an acceptable punishment for what Wilson did, but we'll get into that in a second because I went and looked up some history and we'll bring that up in a second. But here's why I have a hard time with this. He's been suspended. Tom Wilson's been suspended on 5 separate occasions for spans of 2 games, 4 games, 3 games, 20 games, and 7 games for extremely questionable hits on rather defenseless players. Now, the Department of Player Safety apparently said that the fact that he punched Pavel Buchnevich when he was on the ground wasn't anything worth more than a $5,000 fine. They made no ruling, no issue whatsoever on the Artemi Panarin part, basically saying that what happened between Panarin and Wilson was completely within the rules of a scrum on the ice. Yeah. And there was no comment whatsoever about the stupid flexing he was doing in the penalty box and the arguing he was doing on the way across the ice when he was basically escorted off for the 10-minute misconduct. This, to me, should have been a 10-game suspension. I know that it's a heavy suspension that I'm putting out here. 10-game suspension, basically the last 4 games of the season and the entire first round of the playoffs is what I'm basically proposing. And I'll give you the reasons why in a second, but let's get your thoughts on it, Jenna, because I know you saw this and were like, what the heck?
Well, I think you brought up obviously like repeat offender, you know, happening. And I don't know if there's some, like, I was reading briefly, honestly, my brain is a little mush. The score's taken over, but I was reading something somewhere and I don't know if there's like, they don't look at, like, they only look at like isolated incidents. Wow. When they're or something. So like, I don't know, but at the same time, like, if you have someone that's like continuously like doing things to that sense, like, don't get me wrong, I'm all for aggression and like that kind, but like, that's way past aggression. That's way past anything. And then, you know, it starts off bad and then it gets worse. And then, you know, he's mouthing off the whole way to the penalty box, which that realistically, like, you know, that's unsportsmanlike conduct, which you give people $5,000 fines for. So why not add another $5,000 onto it, because he's doing something else he shouldn't be. And then he's sitting in the box. Like, I just like, man, just tell him to kick rocks already.
Like, so here's the thing. And I'll read you a couple of comments that were made, because I again, none of that is wrong. And this is where it starts to get a little ridiculous. So after the entire sort of setup happens, where he gets the $5,000 fine and players and people start to react, Ryan Strome, who was involved in the melee, called it a joke. He said, quote, "I think it's a joke, to be honest with you. I think Tom Wilson is an effective hockey player. I think he's proven he can score goals. He can play with good players. He plays the game on the edge, which is what it is, and he's got good skill, and he's produced in this league. But I think that crossed the line. I think the whole play from the start, it was just, you know, Buknevich trying to score a goal and jam the puck in, and everything from the stick on his neck or the head and everything after that, and a defensive player. And Panarin, in my opinion, with no helmet on, a superstar in our league, I think it's a joke, to be honest with you." Mm-hmm. So Ryan Strome, who's involved, who was involved in that entire melee, calls it a joke, which is fine. I mean, that's up to him to, I mean, he can make his, whatever comments he wants. The Rangers doubled down, though. Rangers came out and basically called for the head of the Department of Player Safety, George Parros. They called for him to be fired, which, again, a lot of people went, what are you talking about? So the statement from the Rangers reads, "The New York Rangers are extremely disappointed that Capitals forward Tom Wilson was not suspended for his horrifying act of violence last night at Madison Square Garden. Wilson is a repeat offender," which we've already gone over, "with a long history of these type of acts. We find it shocking that the NHL and their Department of Player Safety failed to take the appropriate action to suspend him indefinitely. Wilson's dangerous and reckless actions caused an injury to Artemi Panarin that will prevent him from playing again this season. We view this as a dereliction of duty by NHL head of player safety, George Parros, and believe he is unfit to continue in his current role." Like, that's a strong statement. Perhaps the biggest statement, though, and this is the one that I think raised my eyebrows the most, came from Matt Cook. Again, known troublemaker, known terrible guy throwing terrible hits and guy throwing questionable hits and making questionable plays. When Matt Cook comes out and says, quote, "He looked like a toddler having a fit," you know you're probably in the wrong there.
100%, that is the perfect. Like, I watched that clip over and over, and every time I was more like, what? Like, every time it blew my mind just a little bit more. Like, that is a perfect quote.
Matt Cook nailed. And don't get me wrong, Matt Cook's got his history with Department of Player Safety is long and extremely storied as well. I mean, Matt Cook was suspended for multiple reasons when he was in the NHL. But when Matt Cook comes out and basically calls you a toddler, like, you've probably screwed up somewhere.
100%. Like, there's something's not quite right there.
So the thing is, and I mean, Ryan Strome said it best, Wilson can play. He had a goal and assist in that game versus the Rangers. He has 13 goals and 20 assists in 43 games this season. Why does he continue to do stupid things on the ice? You know you can play the game at a high level. Why do you need to resort to this kind of stupidity?
Yeah, it doesn't. I don't know if it sounds, it seems like almost like an ego thing. You know what I mean? Like,
maybe that, like, that masculinity being.
Yeah, 100%.
So Elliot Friedman went back and sort of looked at the game and said there was a missed call that, you know, it looked like Wilson was kind of angry about. And then it just, you know, there was a questionable hit that he kind of, you know, took offense to, and then went back to the bench and sort of stewed for a little bit. And he basically, this was a culmination of officials not making the right calls and Tom Wilson just being infuriated.
Okay.
So I went back.
You learn to tame that, even if that is the case, like,
right.
Vividly remember when I was younger, I took one dumb penalty, and bummer, my coach was like, "Never ever again." Like, just laid into me. It was like, you don't do things like that. And you learn, like, yeah, you get mad and stuff, but you need to be able to control it, especially as a professional hockey player at that age. Like,
and that's what Elliot Friedman said, is that he has to learn how to control that. But so I went looking back through history, through NHL history, to find similar incidents that have been resulted in suspensions. Okay. And there aren't many. I will say that right now. There aren't many. Most guys end up fighting and then it's all over, or they, you know, they chirp in the box and then it's all over, whatever. The most recent and the one that resembled this the most, and you may remember this game, January 11th, 2020, the Edmonton Oilers and the Calgary Flames met. In that game, Matt Tkachuk threw a kind of questionable hit on Zach Cassian earlier in the game. Cassian didn't like it. Cassian and Tkachuk started chirping. Later in the game, Zach Cassian had the puck behind the net, and again, Tkachuk came in and threw kind of a high hit on him that wasn't penalized. Cassian lost his mind, basically ragdolled Tkachuk to the ice, threw a bunch of punches as Tkachuk was down on the ice, and yeah, things just kind of devolved from there. The end result was that Cassian was suspended 2 games for being the aggressor in that incident.
Interesting.
Could we not have given two games, a minimum of two games, to Tom Wilson for being the aggressor in this incident? Like, you already have a precedent that you set 1 year earlier.
Yeah, you would think so. Obviously, someone's just trying to, I don't even know, but like, he clearly, like, oh, it's just, it's insane to me that they didn't even, like, think twice. They're like, oh, well, $5,000, no big deal. Haha.
So,
go again for all we care, because it's another, well, like, are you joking?
Speaking of again, Rangers and Capitals met Wednesday night. And what happened right off the opening face-off? Line brawl.
I love to see it, though.
Line brawl. There was a bunch of dirty plays in there as well. Buknevich cross-checked Anthony Mantha in the face after being slashed repeatedly by Mantha. Like, there is a lot of dirty plays on this. And you think this all could have been avoided if you just would have suspended Wilson for two games for being the aggressor, just as you did for Zach Cassian.
You would think. Yeah. It literally doesn't make sense still to me, like, at all.
So the question becomes, though, is the Department of Player Safety even worth having anymore? Like, is it worth, again, Brendan Shanahan, when he ran that, he tried to really jack up suspensions, like, to make players realize that if you're going to do stupid stuff, you're going to pay for it in a big way, either through fines or through loss of wages through suspensions. And the GMs complained hard to Bettman and told them to dial it back. And yeah. So you go, all right, so if the NHL GMs don't want this, if they're the ones that are complaining about their players missing time and these guys missing time, what's the point of having a Department of Player Safety at all if it does nothing?
Yeah, like, essentially you should be there for the players and it's about keeping them safe. But if nobody actually wants it, what's the point? And if you're not going to do anything anyways, what's the point?
Well, and I mean, you know, you sort of look at what he did, you know, Tom Wilson did. Watching the game on Tuesday night between the Flyers and the Penguins late in the game, Shane Gostisbehere bear cross-checked Mark Friedman from behind after Friedman scored on the empty net, sent him into the boards. He wasn't hurt. He got up right away and basically came over and gave Gostisbehere the what's for, as there was a big scrum behind the net. Shane Gostisbehere was suspended for two games for that cross-check. And you go, how is it that Tom Wilson, who pile-drived a helmetless player into the ice, got nothing for that?
After, you know, giving one to, I forget who it was, but, like, he had to stick there. Like, there was two dirty plays, one after the other, and it's nothing.
But, like, if Gostisbehere gets two games for a push from behind that basically, knocked Friedman into the end boards after he scored a goal, if Gostisbehere gets two games for that, how does Wilson get away with murder? That's my question. Because there is no correlation then. There is no sense, and there is no sense in talking about any sort of precedence, because it doesn't seem to matter to the Department of Player Safety. It's basically just make it up as you go.
Well, that's the thing. Like, they should be looking at, like, safety-wise of, like, what could have happened, worst-case scenario, when they're making that decision. You know what I mean? Like, realistically, like, yeah, that was bad, and it could have been a lot worse than it was, though. Like, he doesn't have a helmet on. He doesn't, like you said, he's suspended for two games, you know, a little push from behind, whatever. Like, that's because it could have been very, very dangerous, and he could have been very, very injured. So why is it any different when it comes to this?
And this is a question, basically, that's a fantasy question, but we'll ask it anyway. Should the Department of Player Safety be an independent group away from both the NHL and the NHLPA? Because if it was, you would get far more objective rulings handed down on players who break the rules.
Yeah.
I mean, having former players in there, got quote-unquote guys who played the game that are supposed to understand the situation, is probably a good idea in theory, but a terrible idea in reality. I mean, we're talking about George Parros, a guy who, and again, George Parros is a smart guy, went to Ivy League college. He, you know, got his degree. He's a smart dude, but he also owns a company called Violent Gents.
I didn't know that. Okay. Yeah. Realistically, yeah, like, I don't know. There could be pros and cons to, you know, doing it, having people outside of the NHL in general doing that. Like, obviously, yeah, like, you're going to have that objective, whatever, perspective. At the same time, that could get taken advantage of in the opposite way, where then they're handing out suspensions 24/7 for things that maybe, like, don't, you know what I mean?
But they should, like, be handing out suspensions if it breaks the rules, though. That's the question. Like, yeah. We're not saying that they're going to be handing out suspensions for a guy, you know, skating by, and, you know, and again, I get that there are going to be times where things just, you know, where a guy goes to throw a hit, another guy ducks at the same time, and they, you know, he kind of catches his head a little bit. Like, there'll have to be reviews of every play. I get that, in terms of what this Department of Player Safety, or this independent Department of Player Safety, would have to do. But I'm looking at it as, if you can't even establish a baseline as to what's legal and what's not, because right now nobody knows. I mean, it's the same thing for goaltender interference. Nobody knows what goaltender interference is.
Yeah.
And you just go, at some point, in some way, this is going to cost somebody big time. Whether it be, if we're talking about the Department of Player Safety, their livelihood or their job or their life. Again, we could have seen another Bill Masterton there if Panarin had landed on his head.
100%.
And then you look at the goalie interference, and you go, this is going to cost a team a playoff series. This team is going to cost a team, you know, a chance to go to the Stanley Cup or something. Like, I just look at it and I go, there needs to be some sort of baseline that everybody can go, okay, we know where the line is drawn in the sand. And right now, there is no line. It's a constantly moving border.
Yep, I agree. Like, it needs to be some sort of consistency, right?
And yeah, I mean, that's essentially what everybody's looking for.
Yeah, like, why do they not have that ever? but
again, that's right. Like, that's, as a professional league, this is basically now a joke that you can't establish what's right and what's wrong on the ice.
Yeah,
like John Scott posted a video on social media that basically said, if I'm going into every scrum, if I'm in the NHL and I'm going into every scrum and I'm sort of a fourth liner tough guy, I'm taking cheap shots and sucker punches at all the stars now, because you set the example for me. You told me that this is legal.
Yeah, 100%.
So, I mean, what's to stop? And again, I'm not saying that this is going to happen, and I hope it doesn't happen. But what's to stop a guy like? And again, I'll say that I'll just throw a name out there. What's to stop a guy like Derek Forbert from, say, you know, sucker punching a Connor McDavid in the first round of the playoffs?
Yeah. At that point, like you said, they know they're not getting, that's basically a slap on the wrist. Like, they make enough money that $5,000, yeah, it's a lot, but it's not much. So yeah, pay that money and you're not going to miss any games. And there's going to be someone that, you know, doing something that could help your team out.
Right.
So why not? If you know you're not going to get in trouble per se, then do it. Obviously don't do it, but like, that just
or learn to control your learn to control your anger. Like, that would be the easiest thing you can do here. But again, if you want to be a toddler having a fit, as Matt Cook said, be my guest.
Like, don't get me wrong, sometimes emotions get high, do whatever, but like, when he's clearly, like, Wilson, a repeat offender, like, you're doing that consistently all the time, like, at that point, it's not just like emotions are high at one point, it's literally proving that you can't control your anger, and be also, you're, know that there's no consequences, so why not do it?
I don't know. To me, I mean, like I said, I thought that the NHL missed the mark big time, obviously, with that. I mean, again, and I'm not saying that he needed to be suspended for life. I mean, I know there were people that were comparing it to the Todd Bertuzzi, Steve Moore incident. And I think that's completely unfair, because one was an act of retaliation, where this was more of a, in the moment, take advantage of a player situation, which is why I went looking for examples like the Cassian Kachuk one, where it just sort of happened. And I look at that and I go, honestly, like, you had a chance to fix this, and then you allow all hell to break loose. Like, if there are any suspensions that come out for all the crap that went on, you have to basically erase those, because the NHL caused those suspensions to happen.
Yeah, 100%.
If this is the way that the NHL is going to, quote unquote, protect players, specifically star players, I don't want to be part of it anymore.
I agree. There's no, like, no safety. It's not even at that point, like, it's a great adrenaline rush when it happens, but like, there's going to be so many people getting hurt if there's nothing being done about it. So,
well,
something's got to change. Something needs to change.
Yeah, right? I mean, that's pretty obvious that if there aren't changes,
very injured again.
Right. I was going to say, if there aren't changes, somebody is going to get really hurt. So,
yeah.
A couple other NHL notes before we get on our way to other leagues and other places that we went. Big shout out to former Winnipeg Ice Forge Peyton Krebs on Monday night. I mean, at least something good happened on Monday night. Peyton Krebs, who was with the Ice in the Regina bubble for the several weeks that the Ice played there, got called up to the Vegas Golden Knights on Monday and skated in his first NHL game. Big moment. Got the old traditional solo lap out there. Didn't have to wait long though. Peyton Krebs set himself up a nice little memory there as he gifted a pass over to Alex Tuch, who ripped it home for the third Vegas goal on Monday, giving Peyton Krebs the first point of his NHL career. So congratulations to Peyton. That's a fantastic accomplishment.
That must feel so nice, like so good. Just get out there your first game and you're already doing things like that. Like that's huge.
He said it took him a period basically to sort of, you know, feel out the NHL a little bit to get going because he'd already been, I mean, it's not like he came in cold or anything like that or whatever, but took him about a period, but he said the second period, he started feeling really good. And I mean, the pass that he made, he basically threaded the needle to Tuch cross ice from center ice to the left wing where Tuch was flying into the zone. And then Tuch wired it upstairs against whoever they were playing that night. Minnesota Wild. So yeah. Tuch scored his 18th goal from Krebs and Nicholas Roy at 12:20 of the first period. So Krebs got himself a nice new puck for the mantle, it looks like.
There you go. Yeah, no kidding. I love it.
So congratulations to Peyton Krebs. That was some awesome news there. You know what's and the weird part is, and I'll only say this because Krebs, when the WHL was trying to figure out what they were doing in terms of, you know, having games and figuring out how to play games, Krebs went and played with the Henderson Silver Knights in the AHL. He recorded one goal and four assists in five games of the Silver Knights. He's basically a point per game player in the AHL. And now he's a point per game player in the NHL.
There you go then.
Like kid's got himself a future, I think.
Yeah, no kidding. Obviously he's doing something right.
I mean, he came back and he just turned it on though. And I mean, this is the part that I was most impressed with is he came back, didn't complain, didn't whine about, you know, not having a chance to play in the AHL anymore. Came back, played with the Ice, tore it up. 13 goals, 30 assists in just 24 games with the Ice. So Krebs is certainly having himself a heck of a year and want to see that continue. So congratulations to Peyton Krebs because it's not often you get to play in three different leagues in one year. So
yeah.
And light it up, might I add.
No kidding. Hey, he's doing something right, like I said. So good for him.
Milan Lucic, if we go to other news, more funnier news, Milan Lucic announced that he's going to waive his no trade clause to allow him to be exposed in the Seattle expansion draft this summer. When asked why, Lucic stated that he didn't want to handcuff GM Brad Treliving in the expansion draft. So Lucic trying to be the nice guy here, kind of like Enstrom when the Jets had their expansion draft issues with Vegas. They got Enstrom to waive his no trade clause. Lucic voluntarily did his. When asked about the possibility of selecting Lucic in the expansion draft, though, the Seattle Kraken replied, "Are you kidding me?"
This is a good story when we first talked about it. It's not what you would expect to hear in it.
I'm going to tell you right now, the Kraken didn't say that. I'm just throwing that in for fun. But again, I can't see them. I can't see the Kraken wasting a pick, not wasting a pick, but using a pick on Milan Lucic when there are other good younger players out there that the Calgary Flames have. So
yeah, you do need to start building, right? You can't take a bunch of, you know, older, not that he's a bad player by any means, like he's not, but you need to, especially starting out, like, yeah, you might have a tougher year to start, but you need to build from, you know, the bottom up. You don't want to be, yeah, that's fair.
Well, I mean, if they're looking at, and again, I mean, it sounds like they're going to start looking at, you know, younger players, sort of selecting some of the younger players who might be available from some of these teams. But you think about the cap space they're going to have, because they have to select, I believe it's just under $50 million worth of contracts that night. So they have to have $50 million on the payroll. But if the salary cap is up around $87.5 million, they have $37 million to play with. So you wonder if Seattle's going to go sort of, I don't want to say cheap, but sort of go cheaper so that they can save some of that money and really go out and spend in free agency to really bring some good players in for that first year of Kraken hockey. But
yeah,
I guess we'll see what happens.
I'm excited to see like what happens with that whole organization and just how everything plays out there. Cause it's exciting getting a new team just to see it all like unroll. I don't think that's the right word, but you know what I mean. It'll be interesting to see where everything goes with that.
It'll be tough to see. I mean, obviously not tough for some of these players. They're going to get a new opportunity, but it'll be tough to see some of these players go and some of these players figure out, you know, who wants to be where and who wants to get going. Sure. So
I agree with that.
I think Seattle's gonna have some fun though. I think they're excited, yeah. So good to see them getting going. Last sort of bit of news: Canucks made it official on Tuesday after the right here on the Hockey Show. We reported it last week that it had been discussed, and now it's official that the city of Abbotsford is going to host the AHL franchise for the Canucks after the city of Utica in New York basically went out and trademarked the Devil's name, which all but sealed the fate of the Comets. According to everything that's happening, and there is an AHL vote today in terms of the Board of Governors getting together, the Utica Devils will resume play in Utica after moving from Binghamton, and the Vancouver AHL franchise will move to Abbotsford, where the name Comets will not be used going forward. They will choose a new name. So a little bit of movement in the AHL. I mean, last time Abbotsford was there, they were the Abbotsford Heat, obviously with the Calgary Flames affiliation there. I don't know what you'd use for Abbotsford as a team name.
Yeah, I know. I was trying to think of that too when we talked about this before, and I really don't know. Like, what? I don't know.
I know. I don't have any.
But I feel like it could be bad, but it could be good.
I'm hoping it'll be good, but I mean, yeah, I don't really know enough about the city of Abbotsford that I could go, oh well, that's what they're known for, like if it's some sort of like special, you know, icon or something in their city. But I also don't think that you can really build off, like the Moose I get, because they had a spot here, and you know, you kind of go, okay, like they just kind of had the name and everything here in Winnipeg or whatever. But like, you see some of these teams kind of, like, okay, again, the Golden Knights and Silver Knights, I mean, they kind of relate to one another. I don't know if you can relate anything to Canucks.
Yeah, and I'm just, so Abbotsford, according to my research on Google, is known for its, or famous for its farm country, the Abbotsford Air Show, and cheap gas. So... I don't know what you can get from that.
Cheap gas, eh?
We need to get out there, I think.
That'd be nice, yeah. Air show could be interesting, though, if they're going to go with an aerial, maybe an idea of an aerial. I mean, again, and I know that, you know, we have Jets, obviously, here in Winnipeg. The Winnipeg Avros, obviously named after the Avro Arrow, and in terms of where it was created and founded and everything like that. So maybe there's a chance for some sort of aerial imagery there to be used for the logo, but we'll have to see. There's been no word yet about a name the franchise, but when it starts and when it happens, we'll certainly bring you information on that as well, because I'd like to see something good go into Abbotsford, something fun. So,
yeah, for sure.
From the West Coast to, oh, where do we want to go next? Let's go to, you know what? Let's go to a guy who played in the AHL for a long time. Big shout out goes out to former Manitoba Moose defenseman Maxime Fortunis, who announced his retirement earlier this week. You may remember Maxie playing here in Manitoba. Maxie played 4 seasons with the Moose, appearing in 271 games, where he scored 20 goals and 53 helpers from 2005 to 2009. He was signed as a free agent by Dallas, and Fortunis would help the 2014 Texas Stars win the Calder Cup after missing out in 2009 when Hershey beat Manitoba 4-2 in the final, and in 2010 when Hershey beat Texas. So he's 1-for-3 in Calder Cup finals. He finishes his career having played 9 NHL games only with the Dallas Stars.
Huh.
Like, you think, okay.
For some reason, I thought it was more than that.
I did too, actually. I thought he played, I'm not going to say a full season, but I thought he played in more than just single-digit NHL games. He did suit up in the AHL with Houston, Manitoba, Texas, Iowa, and Springfield. He also played with Louisiana in the ECHL, and he finished his career in Germany with Fishtown. He spent 18 years in pro hockey.
Wow.
A long time, and only to play 9 NHL games.
Yeah.
And he was so good. Like, I always thought that he was one of the most reliable defensemen when he was here with Manitoba. Like, loved watching Fortunis play, loved watching the way he played the game. He was so good defensively. And again, he scored 20 goals. He had a 53. He actually scored his first AHL goal as a member of the Moose.
Oh, neat.
So a little bit of history there for the Manitoba Moose as well. But I mean, you look at his numbers and you go, like, dude could play. How come he never got a shot? But it's just one of those things, I guess, that Maxie never really got a shot to move up.
Yeah, I just still am blown away that it was only 9 great games. Sorry. It seems for some reason I thought that it was more than that.
I mean, again, I thought it was too. I thought it would have been significantly more, to be honest, but 9 games with Dallas. So, I mean, good for him, though. I mean, he had a great career and certainly, you know, want to wish him best in retirement and certainly, you know, whatever he's going to move on to. He's from Quebec, from Montreal, Quebec originally. So maybe there's a chance that Maxie goes back there and something can get a job with Canadians or something along that line, or stay in Texas and work with the Stars or the Texas Stars or Dallas Stars, one of those. So we'll see what happens there, but good career for Maxime Fortunas, that's for sure. Jump to the ECHL quickly. Shout out to Colin Shirley, who signed with the ECHL's Allen Americans on Friday after starring at the University of Saskatchewan. You might remember Colin Shirley a little bit. He was quite the prolific scorer for the University of Saskatchewan Huskies. Shirley recorded a penalty in his first game on Friday with the Americans, so nothing really happening that big in that game, but scored his first ever professional goal on Sunday. Ready for a little Twilight Zone here for you, Jenna?
Oh, I'm ready.
Scored at 1:11 of the first period, and he wears number 11.
Wow. No way.
Yeah.
There's that. Honestly, I'm so into all these, like, number, like, not which things, but you know what I mean? Like the
yeah.
That kind of stuff lately. And like, that's big. That's a big thing.
So yeah, scored the 1:11 of the first period while wearing number 11. They went on to win that game. They downed the Wichita Thunder 4-3 in the game where he scored. So he scored the opening goal and helping them win 4-3. Shirley, for those who are looking for a little trivia knowledge, Shirley beat Wichita Thunder netminder Hayden Lavigne for the record. For the goal and his record-setting goal there for his first ever goal. Hayden Lavigne played 4 seasons with the University of Michigan Wolverines. So don't say there's no talent in Canada West.
Yeah, no kidding, hey.
Don't say there's no talent in U Sports, because we just saw a kid. And again, if you catch the highlights on Hockey Blog in Canada, if you catch the highlight, like, Colin Shirley is a great player. Don't get me wrong. Like, we're never going to take anything away from Colin Shirley. He's a phenomenal player. He certainly did a lot. Colin Shirley basically broke in, went to the backhand, flipped it up high on Lavigne in terms of scoring the goal, which we've seen him do a ton of times in Canada West. But you look at that and you go, like, the stuff the kid learned at the University of Saskatchewan, the plays he learned to make, he's using in the ECHL now. So congratulations to him, because I mean, who would have known? I mean, again, I know he came out of the WHL and he was a good player there, but the plays he's learning to make, he's making now in professional hockey are what he learned at the University of Saskatchewan, playing against older players, playing against university age players. So,
yeah,
there's benefits to playing university hockey, despite people's, oh, it's Canadian university hockey. No, there are benefits to play this hockey, and there are lots of players that we're seeing going on to professional careers. Colin Shirley's one of them. Good for him.
Yeah. I like to see it. I like to see that. Love to see it.
I'll mention the QMJHL stuff just because I think it's
perfect.
Because I think it needs to be mentioned. And we're on the back half of the show, so we need some stupidity in this back half of the show as well. So let's go to QMJHL stupidity example number, I don't know, 446 or whatever we've talked about on the show.
I'm gonna say at least 572.
Sure. We're probably somewhere close to that number, depending on how we break this down. But here is the new stupidity. As we know, the playoffs are ongoing, and the playoffs are having, again, we saw the bubbles in Quebec sort of kick off. We saw the bubble in New Brunswick kick off, and we saw Charlottetown waiting on the sideline for those three New Brunswick teams to figure out who was going to play them. As a result of rising COVID numbers along the East Coast, we already saw Nova Scotia shut down. PEI and New Brunswick now have both limited all non-essential travel between their provinces. Basically, nobody can come in and come out unless they have a reason to do so. Okay, so that's going to limit those teams from New Brunswick, whichever team wins, going to PEI and vice versa. So as a result, the QMJHL, sickness, pandemic, virus be damned. As a result, the Maritimes Division Final that will now see the Charlottetown Islanders meet the Acadia Bathurst Titan has been moved. We're still going to play it.
No.
The question is where. These two teams will meet in Shawinigan, Quebec to determine who wins the Maritime Division.
I just... I can't even with this league.
The winner will go on to play in the Final Four, the Final Four teams who have the round robin and playoff or whatever. The winner, so either Acadia, Bathurst, or Charlottetown, will go on. The loser gets to go home and quarantine for 14 days.
What a treat, eh? I just, this league is driving me insane lately. Like,
the series between the Islanders and the Titan will start on May 8th and will run as a best of five series before the Final Four will begin. So this has gone from idiotic to stupid to downright ridiculous. And I just love it because the QMJHL does not care. They are going to finish these playoffs, damn it, whether you like it or not.
Seriously, they are so determined.
And I mean, whatever. I mean, we were talking with Jason last week about all of the fans that were in the different stadiums and the different rink or the different arenas in New Brunswick. And they kept going. Like they went right through. Like they had another 2,200 people in St. John the other day.
You know, at least they have the support to keep playing, but I mean, come on.
Like, I don't get it. I don't understand. Like, I know I like WHL wrapped up their Saskatchewan bubble, their Regina bubble. And said, okay, we're good. We're done. And then Alberta, which is their bubble is finishing up this week. They're doing the same. Okay, we're done. Whoever wins, wins. Like, no, there's no playoff sort of thing or whatever. The U.S. bubble and the WHL, the USBC bubbles, both have said the same thing. Nope, no playoffs. We're just going to move on. Like, no big deal. OHL said, we're not even going to have a season. We're just going to move on. Like, so sad, too bad. Like, we're not even going to take the risk right now. QMJHL does not matter.
I just it blows my mind.
I just don't get it. Like,
they honestly do not care. Like, they remind me of my dog right now. He does not care about anything at all.
I'm with
bark, yell and complain and whine and get what he wants.
But that's the thing. Like, I'm without any sort of, like, you can't even justify this being a good idea now. Like, you have three of the four provinces that make up the QMJHL have said we're not having games, and yet the QMJHL is like, yep, move to Quebec then, we're good.
No, they do not, like, they don't care at all.
I don't understand. I don't get it. So, I mean, hopefully, I'm going to knock on wood a little bit here. Hopefully, nobody gets sick, because...
Oh my god. Sorry, I shouldn't laugh, but like, it would just, oh,
I can't. I just can't anymore. I just don't know what the cue. So whatever. Speaking of COVID, the canceled PWHPA stop in St. Louis is back on.
Yes.
Perfect. Presented by Centene, which is a healthcare provider apparently. The games will now be played in St. Louis by the two American contingents of the WHPA on May 16th and 17th. Saturday's game will go at noon Central Time at the Centene Community Ice Center, while Sunday's game is a 6 p.m. Central Time puck drop at the Enterprise Center, home of the St. Louis Blues. So big game on Sunday night. No word on NBC coverage yet, so keep your eyes on social media for that news as the final stop. And this is key, the final stop on the U.S. portion of the Secret Dream Gap Tour hits the city of St. Louis.
Yeah, that's it. Worked out well before, but...
I guess with no world championship, they can go back and... play the games now.
Yeah, everyone's isolated, all healed up. They've isolated, they're good to go, so let's go
healthy again. Yep, just try and force it again. So here we go. Speaking of the world championship, as we know, it was canceled in Halifax and Truro. There are rumors that there will be a Canadian Dream Gap Tour stop for Canadian PWHPA players in early August, likely in Calgary, depending on how Alberta treats this COVID-19 situation.
Yeah.
The idea is to centralize Team Canada there before the Women's World Championship, which the IIHF has stated is being eyed for Alberta. So it looks like Alberta is going to get another big IIHF event. And on top of that, they'll, because that's happening at the end of August, on top of that, they'll move the Canadian PWHPA teams into their own little setup in early August and let them play there and then allow the team to centralize together. So it makes sense to do it that way, but it also doesn't, because what happens if somebody gets hurt?
Yeah. It's, yeah. I mean, that and also, like, Alberta's not doing great with their whole COVID situation.
Alberta is basically, Alberta's the only place worse in this world right now than Alberta is India.
Yeah, I don't know. We'll see, I guess. Obviously, I want to watch some, you know, women talkies and good games, but at what cost?
Well, I mean, you think about it, there's going to be, what, three Canadian teams there then? Because there'll be a Quebec team, there'll be a, I guess, that sort of Ontario East team, and then there's sort of the Western Canada team that'll be there. So there'll be three teams there, and they'll be able to play sort of a little mini tournament, maybe like a Friday, Saturday, Sunday sort of thing or whatever, and figure out, you know, who wins what with whatever point totals at that point. But I mean, it'll be nice to see some of those players get out there. I mean, Jordy Zacharias from Winnipeg is one of those players who might be going, and certainly love to see her out there playing. I mean, I'm not going to lie, I got her jersey this week, her PWHPA jersey. So,
oh, that's so cool.
Yeah. So I'm proud to wear a Jordy Zacharias jersey out there, you know, to support her out there. And we'll see if she makes it out there. But at the same time, though, I mean, if Alberta can't get this COVID thing under control, I mean, are we really going to try and force the Women's World Championship to play there?
Well, I mean, we might not, but I think that they will force it, yes.
Well, they will, because they have to sort of put it on now, because, again, the women got super angry last time, and I don't blame them, but I don't know. This seems ridiculous. Unless something changes over the next couple of months. I know Alberta is instituting a lockdown starting, I think it was today or yesterday or something like that. I know that they're trying to sort of do whatever to get it under control, but you look at these provinces where they don't have it under control and you just go, and I'm not saying that Manitoba does. I think we're one of the lower totals, thankfully, but we're not certainly not killing it with our, you know, with our lockdown or our control or anything like that. But you look at Alberta and you go, they have like triple the number of cases that everybody else does.
Yeah, they're not doing very well over there, that's for sure. I mean, obviously I still have some friends out there, and it's, from my understanding, not the greatest of times right now out there, but yet you can still go. Well, I think Calgary actually not shut down, but they went back to their first lockdown situation as of Wednesday. So
that's,
maybe that'll help, but
yeah, I was going to say that might maybe start quelling the numbers a little bit. So hopefully. We'll have to see.
But I mean, you have two huge cities, and if they're both not on the same page, you have people, you know, going back and forth from each city too for work, for whatnot. Like, it's not going to go well.
Speaking of Calgary, I mean, I'm hoping that this will happen, but Canada West announced an alternative format schedule today for the upcoming 2021-2022 Canada West hockey season. It applies to both men's hockey and women's hockey, so there's no difference between the two sports. But here's the plan going forward. The 9 teams will play 20 regular season games. So they're down from the 28 they played last season and what should have been 32 this season with the extra team involved, with a 9th team involved. So they're down a few games, that's for sure. Each team will play each other twice for a total of 16 games, plus there'll be 4 additional regional games to get to 20. For teams that were concerned about costs of traveling with, you know, not having a lot of, you know, money to spend and stuff like that, I know Alberta was in that situation for a while, and certainly, you know, there are certain financial reasons to do this, certainly pandemic reasons to do this as well. It makes sense. I don't like it, though, because if we're going to allow in-school classes, in-person classes in all of these institutions, why are we reducing the number of athletic competitions when the transmission within classrooms is higher than it is anywhere else?
Yeah.
So that's my question. I don't understand why CanWest voted on this today. It was a virtual annual general meeting, and all of the institutions that are part of CanWest voted on the schedules today, and they all agreed that they're going to play to this. So it's not going to change. We're going to have a 20-game regular season this year, but it's going to be significantly less than what we normally see. Now, that 20 games will, again, as I said, was 16 games against every other team. So the teams will see each other at minimum 2 games this season. So there'll be some crossover a little bit between, you know, the Trinity Westerns and the UBCs and the Manitobas and, you know, the teams on the sort of the outer edges. Where they play hasn't been announced yet. There hasn't been a schedule yet. So we don't know who's coming to Manitoba. We don't know if it's going to be a McEwen coming here or a Trinity Western, or if we don't see any of those teams this year. We just don't know yet, which would suck, because I would like to see the new teams, but that's me being selfish.
Yeah. I don't know. Yeah.
The 4 regional games that you're going to get to see, though, and again, this will all depend on how everything is played out, the four regional games that you get to see, UBC and Trinity Western will play four additional games against each other. And don't get me wrong, I understand that that's because they're in the same region. They're literally like 50 kilometers apart. But how does that benefit any other team other than UBC?
Yeah, it really doesn't.
So, okay, like, if you're going to do that, if you're just going to sort of, and again, I'm not saying Trinity Western is going to be a pushover, but UBC is a pretty good team. Alberta and McEwen will play each other two more times and then play one each of Calgary and Mount Royal. Again, how does this benefit McEwen?
Yeah. Fair.
You're talking about the final four teams that were in the Canada West Championships last year. Like, this is not going to be an easy season for McEwen either.
Yeah, hey.
And then Calgary and Mount Royal will play each other twice. Calgary and Mount Royal will play each other twice and then play one additional game against Alberta and McEwen, basically the opposite of what Alberta and McEwen do. Yeah. Manitoba, Saskatchewan, Regina will play two additional games against the two teams that they aren't. So Manitoba will play Saskatchewan two more times and play Regina two more times. Saskatchewan will play Manitoba and Regina, so on and so forth. Again, how does this benefit a team like Regina or a team like Manitoba when you're playing against another good team? Again, there's good teams in every one of these regions. Don't get me wrong. But if you're a team that's trying to build or a team that's trying to get better and you only get to see Trinity Western twice and you only get to see McEwen twice, you only get to see, you know, Regina twice, you only get to see Manitoba twice, who are all younger teams who all have a growing program, is that going to benefit you at all?
Yeah, probably not.
Like, you want to have a measuring stick somewhere in there.
Yeah.
So here's the catch then. And again, I'm just assuming if we're going based upon what happened last year, the same teams that happened that were in the Canada West playoffs last year. So basically the only team that missed last year was Manitoba because Lethbridge is no longer around. So Manitoba was the only team that missed. So assuming that UBC, Saskatchewan, Alberta, Calgary, Mount Royal, and Regina all go again, there will only be six teams that go to the playoffs this year, as opposed to a potential eight, which could have happened, as the quarterfinal will still feature a 3-6, a 4-5, and the two byes to the top two teams will continue, which I thoroughly disagree with.
Yeah, that's interesting, to say the least. It's just, I don't...
Like, I want to see an 8-1 at some point. I would love to see that, don't get me wrong. Like, if it's a... And again, I'm not saying that this is going to happen, but say it's a McEwen or a Manitoba that comes in at 8. Yep. I would love to see them knock off whoever number one is, a Calgary, an Alberta, Saskatchewan, whoever. For just sure. Because it could happen. Like, the parity in Canada West is so close that it could happen. But now we don't get to see that. We basically get to see two teams, whoever it is, already in the semifinal again, when it should be a more difficult road with more teams to get there. I get that 8 out of 9 teams making the playoffs doesn't make for a great who's going to play who and who's going to play where, and there's a playoff race. And all. There isn't really a playoff race other than jockeying for position all season long. And I get that. I get that the optics of that are bad enough. But when you get to the quarterfinal, there shouldn't be a free pass for the top two teams. I don't care if you finish first or second. You shouldn't get a free pass to win one series and go to nationals.
No, 100%. I agree. And like, yeah, I agree with you, actually. Like, obviously, like you said, you know, the 8 teams at that point, it's just like, not, you know, everyone, but pretty much everyone is in playoffs. But at the same time, like, playoff hockey is so much different than regular season. And if you're already having a season where, like, you're playing certain teams more than other teams and whatnot, then, like, I don't know. I think it'd probably be even better to have those 8 teams in there because, you know, everyone has a better chance of improving themselves a little more and, like, getting to play other teams that maybe they could have played throughout the rest of the year and, you know, gotten themselves higher in the standings from playing those other teams. You know where I'm going with this. You know what I mean?
I do know what you mean. But that's what I think, though, is that, and again, I'm not saying this is going to happen. I'm not saying that it could happen, but in a best of three, if the lower seed upsets that team, that higher seeded team in the first game, all bets are off. Like, it's a 50-50 roll at that point. All you need to do is win twice against a higher seeded team, and all of a sudden the entire and that's the thing, is that it's happened before. It'll happen again. It's just that it won't happen this year with an 8 or a 7 seed because they don't get to participate, which kind of sucks.
Yeah. I agree with you. And I mean, I get, you know, COVID and stuff is a thing, but at the same time, you're traveling anyways. What's an extra team or two, you know?
Well, and for the four teams that are playing at home, because they host the series, they host every series, except for the interprovincial ones. Like, when Regina and Saskatchewan play in a series, they go back and forth because they're close enough. When, again, when Calgary and Mount Royal are in a series, they go back and forth because they're close enough. Again, Edmonton didn't, because Edmonton just didn't have to. Alberta didn't have to because they were far enough away. And again, UBC didn't have that benefit either. That, but now that they're close enough, if they play each other, they can go back and forth between those two cities. I get that, especially, you know, a McEwen in Alberta in Edmonton and a Calgary Mount Royal. Like you can swap back and forth between those, assuming that you get the matchups that you like. The four teams that are playing at home don't have to move at all, and two of those teams won't move again for the next round, assuming that they win that series. As long as the higher seed wins, they never have to leave the comfort of their own home. So I don't understand why bringing in two more teams is that much harder.
Exactly, though. Like, it's two teams. Add a little bit more competition, make it a little more interesting for everyone involved, players, fans, everyone, essentially.
Right, right. And I mean, I think that's the big thing is that, I mean, nobody wants to miss the playoffs. Nobody ever plans on missing the playoffs. Don't get me wrong. I mean, everybody goes in thinking the same thing. They're going to go in and they're going to win, and away they go. But it works out that there's always a team that ends up in seventh and they miss the playoffs. Always a team that ended up in eighth and they miss the playoffs. And you go, okay, that sucks. And you want to be in it, but it worked out with eight teams that there were only six that were in there. Now that there are nine teams, put the eight in and just make it happen and make the top two teams earn those berths in nationals.
I agree.
And I'm not saying that because of, you know, Alberta's success or whatever. Manitoba got the same benefit in 2018 when they went to nationals and won. They took the first series off. They didn't have to play anybody. They got Alberta in the second round, got Saskatchewan in the third round. I still think they should have played in the first round. I still think that by not playing, it's harder for them to rev it up for the second round after a team has already come in and then is anticipating playing Manitoba in the second round because they're already at the top of their game. They're already at a high level. Yeah, I think that it's better for the hockey overall if those teams are forced to play at the highest point of their, especially going into nationals, where it's one loss and you're done.
I agree.
So that's my view on it, but maybe I'm too progressive.
I agree with you 100% on that. You'd think that it would just, I don't know, especially with women's hockey, it's like the game is a huge mindset thing. So like you said, if you take a round off, you're going to be playing a team that's coming and revving up. They're already revved up, sorry, ready to go. But at the same time, like you need to earn that spot. And when it comes to like a lot of the time, the teams like, yeah, obviously the teams in first are sometimes a lot better than the teams, you know, near the bottom. At the same time, playoff hockey is such different hockey. And I think you need to be able to earn that, you know, we're going to nationals because we earned it, not because we won like two games.
But that's essentially what happens, though, is that those top two seeds win two games and they're already in nationals. And I don't think I complain a lot about the RSEC on this show because they only had five teams. They have six teams now with Bishops in there. But I really think that having a division that small doesn't benefit those teams. They have great teams in there. Concordia and Montreal are always strong teams. Don't get me wrong, but having those two teams go to nationals every year does not make for a good division.
No, 100%. I agree.
So we'll see how it works, but 20 regular season games this year for Canada West. We'll see probably a schedule come out shortly. We are basically right up against time here, Jenna. So we're going to get out of here right away. Anything you want to say before we go?
No, I think that we are good to go.
I do want to point out that we're still trying to help out St. Adolph. So if you can help St. Adolph and get them, you know, a little bit of money, by all means, do that. I don't know. I mean, again, I know that they're looking for a ton of money in terms of getting stuff going or whatever. They have 28 people that have donated $5,301 on the Amelia.com fundraiser they're doing. Again, anything over $50 is tax deductible. So if you can get your money in there and certainly help them out, I think we're going to have a guest on next week. So make sure you tune in for that, folks. We'll get all that nailed down coming up this week, though, and we'll figure out what's going to happen on that. With that, folks, we are out of here for another week. We'll have some more fun next week here on The Hockey Show. Stay tuned for Free Range Radio with Skippy coming up next here on 101.5 UMFM. We'll see you next Thursday, everybody. Have a good one. You're listening to CJUM FM 101.5 in Winnipeg.
Game on!
Game on!
Have you ever gone for a job interview and been told you need more experience? How do you get experience if you need experience? Does that frustrate you? Career Services wants you to know about Level Up, a new innovative work-integrated learning program designed to provide students with real work experience. Work on short-term virtual projects for real organizations and get paid to do it. You do 80 hours of work, you get experience, you make contacts, and you get paid $1,400. Do one project or as many as you and your time can handle. It's all your choice. For more information on registering or to sign up for an information session, go to Level Up on the front page of the umanitoba.ca/career services site. During our time away from campus, here's a friendly reminder that the UMSU Service Center is here to help you with all your Winnipeg transit-related needs. If you're a new student and need to get your post-secondary PEGO card set up, we're the place to go. We'll get you set up quickly and help you save 20% versus a regular adult full fare pass. Lost your PEGO card? Don't sweat it, we've got you covered there as well. We're currently open Monday through Friday from 10 a.m. till 4 p.m., so come visit us in room 101 on the main floor of the UMSU University Center, call us at 204-474-8211, or email us at umsu@umsu.ca.